you. It's from the Gospel according to Matthew. It's found in chapter 11 and begins with verse 16. Now, to what can I compare the people of this day? They are like children sitting in the marketplace. One group shouts to the other, "We played wedding music for you, but you wouldn't dance. We sang funeral songs, but you wouldn't cry. When John came, he fasted and drank no wine, and everyone said, 'He has a demon in him.' When the Son of Man came, he ate and drank, and everyone said, 'Look at this man. He is a glutton and a wine drinker, a friend of tax collectors and other outcasts.' God's wisdom, however, is shown to be true by its results." And then picking up in verse 25. "At that time, Jesus said, 'Father, Lord of heaven and earth, I thank you because you have shown to the unlearned what you have hidden from the wise and the learned. Yes, Father, this was how you were pleased to have it happen. My Father has given me all things. No one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son, and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him." May God bless the reading and hearing of God's holy word. In the RSV and NRSV translations of this, Jesus says, "To what shall I compare this generation? You cried," now this is my paraphrase, "entertain me, serve me, adore me, 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 me." Jesus is speaking with a group that he is basically calling selfish know-it-alls. A bunch that wants to be wowed and behaves very childishly. This generation cannot be pleased and are hypercritical of everyone but themselves. They criticize John for being disciplined and fasting, said he was possessed by a demon. Then Jesus came along and allowed himself to enjoy a little of life. They called him a drunk and a glutton. Boy, that generation Jesus was dealing with. Have you ever seen such a thing? Well, actually, that could be a pretty apt description for here and now. Now, I don't mean specifically First Christian Church or any particular age group when I say generation. I'm speaking of the culture that surrounds us, the world we live in here in Burleson, Texas, USA. Our culture today is in a cycle of mean-spiritedness. If you read my newsletter article recently, you remember I'm reading Gil Rendell's book, Behavioral Covenants in Congregations. And in his book, Rendell writes of our mean-spirited culture as one that focuses on the needs of the individual over that of the group. And the market has certainly followed suit in that area. If you cater to a person's sense of self-importance, you are much more likely to make a sale. People are more competitive, more confrontational, more concerned about winning, whatever the cost may be. We are more individualistic, and this leads to the breakdown of community. Who needs it? It's all about me anyway, right? When we go to the store for something, we want it to be on the shelf, not to have to wait for it. When we go to church, we want to be fed, nourished, so that we can make it through our coming week. Notice the inward focus. And if we should get mad at someone in the congregation or have a difference with them, too often we do just what we do in society at large. We seek revenge or separation. Is that what Paul said we are ambassadors of? Today, we live in a most violent, rude, litigious, self-absorbed society. People don't use manners anymore. On the freeways and in public venues, I come first so everyone else get out of my way. It's even a popular form of entertainment to view the pain and the suffering of others from the voyeuristic privacy of your computer screen and an internet connection. I don't know if you saw it the other night, but I watched Primetime Outsiders. And they had a section on people who posted gruesome photos of others who had been badly injured or killed in various tragedies. The story focused around a particular family whose daughter was killed in an auto accident and how people started posting photos of her dead body on the internet. What's more, there were those who went even further and took morbid delight in emailing those photos right back to the family. I was appalled when I saw this. I've been at a playground and watched other people's children push mine out of their way to get on a slide or a ride at an amusement park. I've seen grown-ups endanger the lives of others so that they can get a few cars ahead in the line on the freeway. And other so-called adults push their destructive and self-absorbed hidden agendas at church board meetings. Not here, of course. Jesus holds up a light to this generation so that it can be seen, but not so that it can be emulated. Rather, they serve as an antithesis of what we are to be. These things of the generation, the culture around us, are of darkness. They don't build up. They don't encourage or offer hope. More likely, they bring anger, division, sorrow. And this is not what we are called to be. In Paul's letter to the church in Rome in the 12th chapter, he writes, "I appeal to you therefore, brothers and sisters, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds, so that you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect." In other words, yes, we live in the world, but we don't have to behave like everybody else. In fact, we are called to be different, to offer ourselves, our lives as living examples that reveal God and Christ to the world. In so doing, we are transformed, changed into something more than a self-centered, selfish creature that lashes out when it doesn't get its way. As Christians, we are called to be more than what is acceptable in the world around us. Jesus teaches us to love our enemies and pray for those who persecute us. For if we love only those who love us or have something from which we can benefit, how are we different from anybody else? And in the 5th chapter of Matthew, Jesus says, "You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. Nobody lights a lamp and then puts it under a bushel basket, but rather on a lampstand so that it can give light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven." We are called to be the city on the hill, the light on a stand, shining for all to see. We are called to go to the dark places and shine the light of Christ, that the darkness may not overcome it. Too often, we like our shining lights when we're in here with each other and it's comfortable. Or maybe we go out there and we'll shine them with a group of other people who also have their lamps lit. Just put the shine it up where it can be seen, exposed, and vulnerable. It's kind of risky and a little scary. But we are called to be different. To shine a light so that people can see there is another way. Jesus says we shine that light not so people can see how good we are, but so that God can be seen at work in and through us and the glory given where it truly belongs. Paul goes on to tell the church folk in Rome, "Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Do not claim to be wiser than you are. Do not repay anyone evil for evil, but take thought for what is noble in the sight of all. If it is possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave room for the wrath of God, for it is written, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay," says the Lord. No, if your enemies are hungry, feed them. If they are thirsty, give them something to drink. For by doing this, you will heap burning coals on their heads. Do not overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. So if the culture around us is mean, rude, and self-centered, we are to be something different. We are called to be humble. For when we are humble, we can recognize and we can admit we don't know it all. We don't have all the answers. Sometimes don't even have a clue. And that God's still got a thing or two to teach us in this life. What's more, we can see the wisdom of God revealed in others. We are called to be generous, to serve others and give whenever and wherever we are able. For in so doing, we are blessed with the opportunity to share God with one another. We are called to be merciful and forgiving, not to make a list of one another's faults or sins, ready to add the next one on, waiting for them to slip up so you can use it against them. We're called to see our own humanity in all its frailty, to see that God chose us and loved us, and then give that same mercy and forgiveness that we have received. When we do that, together we experience God's healing power. We are called to be hope-filled, to look upon a person or a situation with the eyes of God and see not what is, but what could be. And then to work with God to help make it so. We are called to be loving, not just to those who look like us, who worship like us, who talk like us, who behave like us. We are called in love to open our hearts and our minds so that God and others can enter in and shine light into our dark places. We are called to be all of these things to one another, but not only to one another. We are the light of the world. Christ wants and needs us to shine so the world and the culture around us can see God and experience God's loving, healing, transformative power. To what shall I compare this generation? Oh, that Christ would look upon us and say, "I see grace. I see joy. I see hope and mercy, sharing and giving. I see love."